fall into big savings, all in the Kroger app.
Get packs of juicy red, green, black, or tri-color variety seedless grapes for $3.99 each. Then get tender boneless chuck roast or steaks for $4.99 a pound, all with your card and a digital coupon. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Save big on your next project right now at Menards. Save time on your paint project with help from Duck Clean Release Painter's Tape. Use on walls, trim, glass, wood, or metal for clean removal and clean paint lines every time. Save big and get a 3-pack of Duck Clean Release Painter's Tape on sale now through September 22nd. And don't forget to check out our weekly flyer on Menards.com for all the great deals happening now. Save big money
at Menards. Hello, everyone. Welcome to Slash Film Daily. Today is Wednesday, September 11th, 2024. On today's episode of the show, we are going to gather around the virtual water cooler and talk about what we've been up to. My name is Ben Pearson. I'm an editor at slashfilm.com, and I'm joined on today's episode by Slash Film editor Jacob Hall.
Hello, hello.
All right, Jacob. So let's jump right into it here. What we've been doing recently, normally I don't really have anything to say here because I kind of just like stay at home and don't really do a lot, but I actually went out of my house and did something this past Saturday. I went to Gainesville, Florida, to the University of Florida, my old alma mater, and watched them play a football game for the first time in 13 years. It's been a long time since I've been. Super fun. Hung out with my old college roommates, who I still see about once a month, who live in the same town as me. The Gators' schedule is the hardest of any team in the country this year, so it was nice to see what will likely be one of the very few wins that they'll get this season. But yeah, it was a blast. So I put some pictures of that up on my Instagram in the event that anybody cares about that at all. But
What's changed in the 13 years? Like, were there upgrades to the stadium? Did the concession prices go through the roof? Like, how did the experience modify since you've been there?
Yeah, the concessions have changed a lot. I think the stadium has been upgraded a little bit, but it feels the same. Like, they may have added a little, like an extra section or something with a little bit more seats available or something like that. But for the most part, it feels like very classic and functionally unchanged as far as I could tell, really. I walked around the campus for like just a minute before the game started, and there were definitely like big buildings and stuff that were absolutely not there when I was in school or there 11 years ago, last time I was there on campus. So it was just kind of wild because like so much of it feels exactly the same. And then there's all these brand new additions and stuff. So it's kind of a surreal experience, but just super fun. Highly recommend going to a college football game if you care about that at all. It's worth making the trip. I need to go more often.
I went to art school, Ben. We didn't have an effective sports program at all, but like my wife went to University of Texas. So I know lots of people who like grew up or went to school, like with this being an important part of their educational culture. And to me, it's totally alien. I don't have those memories. I don't have that experience just because if you're in art school to play football, you've gone to the wrong school.
Yeah, there's like a whole like a lot of my family members had went to that same school, and I remember, you know, my granddad actually used to work for the university, so I remember, you know, being very, very young and being in that same stadium, you know, well before I got into the college myself. So just a long legacy that was a big part of my life that I've been watching from afar for a long time. It was just nice to go back. So, all right, let's transition into the next section here, which is what we've been reading. What have you been reading recently, Jacob?
I'm nearing the end of Fairy Tale by Stephen King. I'm trying to, on this very show, shortly before the COVID-19 pandemic, I talked about one of my goals was to catch up on all the Stephen King books I have not read. And he's published over 70 books, and I failed completely after that proclamation to catch up entirely on Stephen King, but I'm trying to do it again now. So we'll see if it sticks this time. There's a period, I want to say, between like 2007 to 2020-ish, where like I just fell way behind on new Stephen King books. And I read everything he's written like straight up through like 2005. Then I kind of fall off just a wee bit. So it's one of those cases where It's funny when I say like I need to catch up on Stephen King. I think there's like 12 or 13 King books I haven't read.
Jeez.
Which is the entirety of some author's entire careers, but for King that's like one fifth, no, not one fifth, maybe one sixth of his of what he's written over his life. So even now, like, he had a new short story collection just a few months ago, and he has a new novel coming out, I think, in the near future. Just it's infuriating how productive he is. And Fairy Tale was written and published, I want to say, 2022, so it's a relatively recent one. And it's one of his fantasy novels. Like a lot of people don't realize that Stephen King writes, in addition to his horror stuff, has a fair number of crime stories and dramas, and also dark fantasy. A lot of more dark fantasy, I think, people who aren't like regular readers may realize. And Fairy Tale, it's good. I think that there's something to be said about early Stephen King, where he was an addict and where things felt like they weren't safe, and he was writing from a place of danger and self-destruction. And those, you know, first 15 years of King stories and books feel really uneasy and raw and upsetting because of the kind of person he was. And post cleaning up his act, like becoming sober in the early 90s, King changed as a writer. He's not as visceral as he used to be, but he's become, in my opinion, a more polished, empathetic writer. And this really stands out in Fairy Tale, which the first chunk of the book is actually, before supernatural stuff even starts, it's a really wonderful story about this teenager living in a small town in Illinois who befriends an older man and his dog, sort of like isolated, cranky old man. They form this really wonderful relationship, and I was really on board with the characters before the old man reveals that he has built a shed on top of a well that leads to an alternate parallel reality fantasy world before his characters.
Oh, wow.
And I think the fantasy stuff's good. The fantasy stuff is like kind of plays like Wolf Neverending Story was super R-rated. It's kind of the vibe. And I know that Paul Greengrass, who did most of the Bourne movies and United 93, has the film rights. And it didn't make sense to me at first, but now I'm wondering if they made a fantasy world that was just Neverending Story but R-rated and shot with Greengrass's hyper-realistic handheld style, that would be a truly unique movie in general. So if you're waiting for the movie, I don't know what the status is for Greengrass's production. He still has the rights. But if you want a solid Stephen King book, one that, has the polish and humanity of his, last 25 plus years of writing, this is a good one. I'm enjoying it quite a bit.
Okay, so that's called Fairy Tale by Stephen King. Let's take a break and then we'll be right back.
Fall into big savings, all in the Kroger app. Get packs of juicy red, green, black, or tri-color variety seedless grapes for $3.99 each. Then get tender boneless chuck roast or steaks for $4.99 a pound, all with your card and a digital coupon. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Okay, so let's get into what we've been watching, Jacob. I just have a few things I wanted to mention, like kind of speed through a few things. I finished Girls 5 Eva, all three seasons. The third season is only 6 episodes, so it's a little bit shorter than the first two. I've talked about the show previously, so I don't need to like go over that ground again, but I really, really like it. And I feel like the final season felt extremely focused over the course of those 6 episodes. And I just want to put a call out into the universe to bring the show back. If anybody who happens to be listening is in a position of power and is teetering on the edge of whether or not they should, what is it called? Renew this show. That's the word I was looking for. Please do it, because I really, really enjoyed the show. It's like a perfect wind down show. It definitely has a little bit of that 30 Rock comedy vibe to it. And yeah, it's really, really good. If you've not seen the show, it's on Netflix right now. So if you're looking for that sort of half hour sweet spot, really nice comedy, maybe to finish a long day type of thing, I cannot recommend Girls 5 Eva highly enough. So
it's time. You and Brad have both talked this show up for ages, and I'm always nervous to start a new show, but I think it sounds like it may be something I'd enjoy.
And it's only 22 episodes right now, so I feel like we just started watching it and it's already over. So it is not like a gigantic commitment. 22 episodes of short episodes, is not that big of a thing. But I really hope that the show gets renewed and that I can spend more time with these characters, because it's really, really fun stuff. So that's on Netflix. Check that out. I also watched the first two episodes of a new show called English Teacher, which is, I think, FX or FX on Hulu or whatever the designation is these days. Have you seen the show yet, Jacob?
No, but you're not the first person to talk about it. I know one of our editors and writers, BJ, was raving about it the other day.
Yeah, Brian Jordan Alvarez is the creator and star of the show. And evidently, he had like a whole online life as a creator, made videos, did all sorts of stuff. And I guess he's gone like viral on TikTok and all of that. I had no idea who this person was. I was not tapped into any of that at all. But English Teacher is a sitcom that deals with modern topics in a really fresh and fun and funny way. And I don't want to overpraise the show too much since I've only seen two episodes. I think three episodes are out right now. But it typically takes comedies a little while to find their feet. And I did not feel that way about what I've seen so far. This feels like a show that knows exactly what it is right at the gate. And I think it could end up being like a new classic. It's really, really funny. And Enrico Colantoni, who played the dad in Veronica Mars, that's where I know him from primarily, plays the principal in the show. It's just really nice to see him. So just like shout out to him because he's just a really comforting, familiar presence to me as somebody who spent a lot of time in that Veronica Mars world and really enjoyed his performance in that show and this one. So English Teacher is available to stream on Hulu, I guess technically on Disney Plus now too, since Hulu got sort of folded into that. So check it out if you're interested. And Jacob, yeah, I'd love to know what you think about it if you get a chance to watch this one.
Yeah, absolutely. I may pop it on tonight, actually. I'm between shows right now, looking for the next thing to latch on to. So I think between Girls, Five Eva, and English Teacher, maybe I will do a comedy binge next.
Yeah. Have you seen any of Industry, the HBO series Industry, yet?
No, because every time I see the title Industry, my brain somehow rewrites it in The Suits. I know that's completely inaccurate and completely wrong, but I go, for some reason, I see the title of that show and think it Suits, and I know how wrong it is. I apologize.
Well, several characters wear suits in Industry, so you're not too far off. This is a show that came out in 2020. Mickey Down and Conrad K created it. It's on HBO. It is set in the world of London banking. And it reminds me a little bit of the movie Fair Play, which came out, I think, last year or maybe the year before, where it's this sort of like high-powered young people making decisions where like millions of dollars live or die, you know, on the decisions that they make. And it's all about like the toxic work culture at this bank and their company. And a character dies, I think, in the first episode. And like an employee at this bank, and there's this scramble to figure out how to deal with that issue from the inside and all that. And it's basically about a bunch of characters who work on the same floor or in the same area of this high-powered bank, just completely going nuts, like partying on weeknights and getting involved in all sorts of drugs and sexual escapades. And it's just really, really kind of intense in that way. The score is great. I haven't really seen too many people talk very much about the score in the vague conversations that I've seen online about the show. It's got this really beautiful sort of dreamy synth vibe for a lot of it, which I love. And all of that being said, I'm not sure if I'm really, I know for a fact that I'm not really in love with the show. And I think I'm probably going to keep going. I just finished season one. Season three is airing right now on HBO, and Kit Harington from Game of Thrones is one of the big, I guess, guest stars or new additions to the cast for season three. So I'm really curious to see what he's like in this environment. So I guess I'm going to keep going with it. But after one season, there isn't really a character that you can latch onto that makes good decisions. Like everybody just kind of does the wrong thing all the time. And it makes for good drama, I guess, but it also doesn't propel me in the same way that some different versions of the story might. So anyway, I just wanted to mention my experience watching season one of Industry. If anybody else has any advice or I've heard like, oh my God, season three in particular is like one of the best TV shows, one of the best seasons of TV that I've seen from a lot of people. I've heard several people say this. So I'm thinking that I'm going to stick with it. But if anybody wants to write in and say, oh, if you really were not hooked by season one, the rest of the show is just more the same, or has any advice or anything without spoiling anything, please feel free to email in and let us know about that. So Jacob, I would definitely recommend like going with the comedies first and maybe waiting out and seeing how industry shakes out as a whole, because I'm not sure like what the grand plan for the show is, how many seasons they plan to run or anything like that. So I will try to report back if I continue my adventures with that show, and hopefully I will end up like slipping into it a little bit more as we go along.
Yeah, keep me apprised. If you ultimately give it a thumbs up, I'll check out more of it.
Okay, cool. All right, so let's get now into what you've been watching. Tell me what you've been watching recently.
All right, well, I want to highlight a trio of bad movies, new releases that I watched, and I want to highlight them because I think they run the gamut of different types of bad movies, all in very interesting ways. So I'll start with Afraid. Did you see Afraid, Ben?
I did not see Afraid. I barely knew that this movie was... it like existed at all, let alone was coming out very, very recently. I think it came out last Friday, right? So like, what the hell was this movie? It didn't really get a ton of marketing or like a big push from its studio or anything. So I'm curious what you think about this one.
Yeah, Afraid was dumped pretty hardcore. It's a Blumhouse release. It's the latest Blumhouse film this year to quietly come and go without much fanfare. It's a really rough year for a usually reliable, you know, label. But Afraid is a new film by writer and director Chris Weitz. One of those guys whose career is all over the place. He's directed About a Boy, The Golden Compass, The Twilight Saga, New Moon, A Better Life, Operation Finale. He's written things like The Creator, the film from last year, the live-action Pinocchio, like Ants, made movie. Just one of those guys, when you look at his filmography, it's like, what is this? He also did all the largely uncredited reworkings of Rogue One when they had to do reshoots. So an incredibly unusual filmmaker in that way. Very mainstream kind of guy, but not really a strong identity to his work. And this film is Black Mirror for idiots, is kind of the way I'm describing it to people. It's about a super powerful AI that's brought into a family home where John Cho and Catherine Waterston, who I love them both, doing their absolute best with weak sauce material here to elevate and like bring emotion to this movie. He works for an advertising agency, and he's being tasked with writing a campaign for this new house AI, like a new, like, you know, Alexa or Siri type thing that will essentially, you know, improve your life and run your house for you. But wouldn't you know it, Ben, the AI is incredibly evil, incredibly possessive, and starts destroying the family. This movie is so stupid. It is, but it's only 84 minutes long. Click got hacked down to nothing, and every single scene is a treasure trove of incredible badness. If somebody in 2050 want to make a movie set in 2024, want to make like a parody of like, oh, let's make a joke about a joke movie set in 2024, it would play like Afraid does. Every single scene is just a treasure trove of, hey, we're in 2024. This is happening now. Hey, self-driving cars, AI. Every single moment is wild in that way. It's just so overbearing and overloaded with, it's trying to be so immediate and on the nose with its cultural relevancy that ends up being a parody of it. It is wild. And some actors, I think, know, kind of are a little more aware of what they're doing. David Dashmalkian, you know, one of the great modern horror actors who pops up all the time in horror stuff, either in the lead or in supporting roles, is in here really hamming it up. But I had a blast watching Afraid. You should not pay to see this movie. Don't rent this. Don't go find a theater still showing it. You should wait until it's streaming somewhere and fire it up while your brain is on the substance of your choice, because holy crap, Ben, is this entertaining bad movie. It is a miscalculation. It's not scary, but it is full of choices. And I just watch it with my jaw agape, like wondering, this is like somebody could make a drinking game out of this. This could be a camp classic. I don't know yet. All I know is that this is the type of bad movie that I had a great time watching. And I hardly recommend it for people who want to really enjoy a bad movie that's swinging for the fences.
Okay, well, I guess that's as close to a ringing endorsement as Afraid deserves from what it sounds like. So there's that under very specific circumstances. So yeah, from according to Jacob, wait until streaming for that one. So it'll probably be a couple months before it's streaming somewhere. You'll probably be able to rent it in a couple weeks or whatever. But okay, what speaking of bad movies, Jacob, one that I have to assume was also a terrible movie. What's the next thing you want to talk about here?
Yeah, the 2024 remake of The Crow from Rupert Sanders. This is a very different type of bad movie in that it's not entertaining. It is uninspired, dreary, a slog to watch. It's the... All right, Ben, here's how boring this movie is and how uninspired it is. You know how when there's a studio movie and they have a very generic villain and they need like, oh, we need to cast somebody as this generic, boring villain who can class up the joint a little bit, but is still affordable. And they flip a coin, and it's either Mark Strong or Danny Houston.
Yes.
Well, The Crow is Danny Houston. Give you an idea of how the coin flip went here. Look, I'm not opposed to a new version of The Crow. I'm not like, I think that if you look at how this film plays out, it's so clear to me that this was that the pitch here, behind closed doors, must have been, what if John Wick was a horror movie? That's clearly what they want to do. And I think that's really the right approach for The Crow. But Rupert Sanders does not have the vision or the chops to pull it off. This is just a really boring, lifeless film. And the whole idea behind The Crow is that it's a supernatural, you know, action story. The character comes back from the dead to essentially right the wrongs and avenge his murdered lover. And the film asks us to buy into these two characters being the absolute loves of each other's lives. And bless her, but FKA Twigs, who is, you know, she's a musician playing the female lead here. I've rarely seen a less appealing performer on screen. I did not buy her in a single moment. She has no chemistry with Bill Skarsgård, who is the lead here. And for a film whose life and death depends on us buying her as somebody who you would literally come... like claw back from the dead to, you know, avenge, just an absolute devastatingly poor casting decision. Mm. Like, ruthlessly bad. And poor Bill Skarsgård. If you look at the history of them trying to, I've been writing about a remake of The Crow since I started in this industry 15 years ago. And I've watched as Bradley Cooper, Jack Huston, Jason Momoa, Luke Evans, every single leading man at the moment was attached to this film at some point. And the roulette wheel stopped on poor Bill Skarsgård, an actor I like, but he feels lost here. He's trying to do a New York accent, but it just sounds Swedish, which I know is his usual accent. And I just was bored and depressed by the entirety of The Crow. It is, even when it gets extremely violent and bloody towards the end, even then, like, never really finds a pulse. And just don't let Rupert Sanders direct movies ever again. It's kind of my best advice for anybody who wants to know what went wrong here. But yeah, don't hire Rupert Sanders and don't cast FKA Twigs. And also maybe let Danny Houston take a break from playing villains, cast him in a comedy, you know, just let him goof around. Because if I have to see Mark Strong or Danny Houston play one more generic villain in a generic studio movie, I am going to march on Hollywood to demand that them be set free to do what they want to do. Because clearly, I can't imagine that Danny Houston and Mark Strong are happy playing these roles, right? Because that's all they ever play these days, and they're too good for this shit.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure they're happy with the homes that these jobs are buying them, you know, the paychecks or whatever, but like, and I understand the mentality of like, you got to get while the getting's good, and like, they're definitely getting in to continue that metaphor or whatever, but yeah, that's rough. I mean, Jacob, like my most, I think a more entertaining experience of The Crow for people might be to just watch the trailer and then just imagine that Bill Skarsgård is replaced by Bradley Cooper in that exact same movie, because he was one of the people who was, as you mentioned, who was in talks to star in a remake of The Crow. And just thinking about where Bradley Cooper is in his career now, you're talking about that roulette wheel. And like, if that had spun on him now, it's just so fascinating to think about how bizarre that would be. As it is, it kind of feels like The Crow is just like a trash movie that nobody will remember in 5 years. But like, man, if Bradley Cooper starred in it, it would be something that we would never stop talking about it, because it would be such a weird outlier in his career.
All right, I have one more bad movie. And this is somehow a completely different kind of bad movie. But I watched The Front Room, the new horror film from A24. and the Eggers brothers, Max and Sam Eggers, who are the brothers of Robert Eggers, you know, A24 darling behind, you know, The Witch and The Lighthouse. And this is a tough film to talk about, Ben. Have you seen The Front Room?
I have not, and I frankly don't really have much interest in it. It just kind of looked too, like, the tone of it looked so heightened and kind of ridiculous that I was like, I'm not really sure I'm going to be on this movie's wavelength.
Hey, I found this to be as actively unpleasant as a movie to sit through as anything I've ever seen. I want you to imagine how much piss and shit you think are in this, if you think would be in this movie. Then quadruple it, because that's how much piss and shit is in The Front Room. It's the kind of movie where it's actively working on you to make you feel like you're having a bad time. If you haven't seen the trailer, the premise is that Brandy, the singer and actor, plays a woman whose husband's stepmom moves in with them, and she's a hyper-religious, old-school, racist garbage monster. And it's about how they clash over control of the family. And there's a really interesting concept here of how Brandy's character is a professor of anthropology and archaeology, and she's, you know, very she's an expert in, you know, old school feminine, you know, symbolism, the idea of mothers and motherhood going back to, you know, ancient times. She's clashing with this, you know, profoundly racist, extremely conservative, like religious fundamentalist, and how their worldviews over how to run the family are like turned into like horror elements, including so much shit. There's so much poop in this movie. Man. I can't recommend anybody on that level and on that level alone, but I can't deny that the Eggers brothers cultivated an atmosphere. Like, watching, I was never bored by The Front Room. I was consistently upset that I was watching it. I didn't want to be watching it anymore, but it's undeniable that I was invested in whatever the hell is going on, especially the villain of the film, Catherine Hunter, plays the stepmother. And you've probably seen her. She plays that overbearing mother in Andor. She was the three witches in the really good Joel Coen Macbeth movie. She's a stage legend. Like, her, like, apparently she is like one of the great stage actors of all time. And her performance is one of the most off-putting things I've ever experienced. A character so hateful and so hateable, I just needed her to be gone. I needed her to be off my screen. I needed her to no longer be in my life at all, which is the emotions that these characters are feeling. Brandy's character feels the same way I do about this character. So it brings me to this really weird place where I will never recommend The Front Room. I found every moment of it interminable and just annoying and painful to watch, but it's not badly made. It is not like The Crow, where it feels like it's this warmed over thing made by somebody who doesn't give a shit. It's clearly a movie made with some degree of skill by filmmakers who are instilling powerful, bizarre, dark feelings in the audience. It's just that I found those to be powerful, dark feelings that I did not want to dissect and had no interest in, like, lingering with. I mean, there are dark, you know, upsetting movies where, like, I'm obsessed with them. I want to, like, dig into why I feel that way. But The Front Room is just so actively unpleasant, and its ending really is a big letdown. Its ending is the most obvious way a story could have gone. And I kept on waiting for it to, like, get deeper or richer or more interesting considering the subject of the matter, but it really doesn't. But I can't deny the tone. I can't deny that it did get under my skin. There's something effective here. I just never, ever want to see it again or think of it again or watch another film by the Eggers brothers ever again. But there's something there. And it makes me so mad there's something there. It reminds me most of the film Brawl in Cell Block 99, a film that I hated when I saw it, but have thought about pretty consistently since then, because that movie is a bad movie that I hated a lot, but I cannot deny that there was something there that's undeniably perverse and interesting. So, yeah, don't see The Front Room, but at least it's not The Crow.
That's such an odd choice for the Eggers brothers to make a movie that is that actively unpleasant and gives that feeling on purpose to audiences, because you would think as up-and-coming filmmakers, you would want to have people leave your movie thinking about, like, oh, I would love to see more stuff from those guys. And it sounds like that this experience gave you the exact opposite feeling. And so I'm just imagining them, you know, taking this around as part of their reel or whatever, and pitching other studios for different projects and stuff, and like making people sit through this movie just doesn't seem like a smart move necessarily from a business perspective on their part. But I don't know, I guess there are probably plenty of examples of people's first movies being challenging, I guess we could put it that way. Yeah, just an interesting thing to think about for people purposefully making a decision like that in a kind of a, I don't know, I would say the film industry is not in a great place these days. And so for people who are actively working in the Hollywood studio system or trying to make a choice like that is just it's notable, I think. So,
I guess you want to compare it to other A24 movies. Let's talk about Hereditary, a film that is crazy upsetting and really disturbing, but actually functions as a movie I like to revisit and talk about and think about. Or even, you know, the Eggers brothers' brother, Robert Eggers, you know, The Witch and Lighthouse are both films that are, you know, deeply unsettling and odd, but I find really compelling and have elements that back up and justify why you're enduring some dark stuff. Whereas The Front Room, I don't want to spoil it. I just feel like if it had found a way to stick the landing and really deliver on some of the thematic ideas that are bouncing around the film, maybe I'll be singing a different tune. But by the time the credits rolled, I was like, oh, that was just 90 minutes in hell as opposed to 90 minutes in hell with a point.
Okay. All right. So the next thing you want to talk about is, I'm so curious about this because I've actually watched the first two episodes of this, and it's Dark Matter, the Apple TV Plus show. You were on the podcast not too long ago talking about this book, and you read the book, and I have since read the book. So now my wife and I are starting to watch the show. So how far into Dark Matter have you gotten?
I finished the season. I know it's been renewed for season two, so I'm all caught up. But yeah, this is our third time talking about Dark Matter on the show, I think, between the book and the show and us like bouncing around with it. But I think the show is better than the book.
Really?
I think that Blake Crouch does a pretty incredible job expanding it. And without spoiling anything, I will say that the book's chief antagonist has a pretty easy go of it in the book. He gets what he wants pretty early, and we check in with him, but he kind of coasts through his plan. And I think as the show needs to expand the book, you know, plays like a movie. It doesn't have enough events to justify a whole season of television. Some of the best stuff in the show is them building entire storylines about the villain's plan not quite working and him on his back heel at all time trying to, you know, keep his head above water as things do not go well for him. The stuff with the main character is very, very book accurate, like to the T. But the stuff with the antagonist is largely new to the show and maybe my favorite stuff in the entire show. I think it's a really smart adaptation. It expands it in really compelling ways. And I think that Blake Crouch, you know, who's a showrunner and the author, does a really fine job of looking for the spots in his book that could have been expanded and rightfully realizing, oh yeah, the antagonist should have, you know, a storyline that's as rich and compelling as the hero. And yeah, I think it's a pretty phenomenal adaptation and I can't wait to see what season two is going to be, even though I have no idea what it could be.
Wow. That's fascinating. Okay. Well, I'm definitely going to stick with it. My wife and I are both going to finish the show. I'm just after two episodes, I was feeling or am feeling that I much prefer the book after just two episodes. And maybe that's because there hasn't been a lot of room yet for the stuff that you're talking about. Cause that does not sound familiar to me in terms of like those new plot lines that have been introduced in the show. I just don't think I've gotten there yet, but there's a decision made in the first couple episodes and I'm going to try to be as vague as possible, but a job offer is presented to the lead character played by Joel Edgerton. And in a certain timeline, let's say. And that job offer, what that presents for that character, what that means for that character, the opportunity that the sort of the carrot that's dangled in front of him completely changes what that character's relationship is like to his life and his work as I experienced it in the book. And I just thought that was a really odd choice that is not in the book and just didn't, I don't think it needs to be there after two episodes anyway. And I think it actively hurts the drama of the story because you're making that character by receiving this high powered job offer. It's changing that character's relationship with his life and his world around him in a way that I feel like lessens the drama of it. So anyway, I'll reserve full judgment until I see most of the show or all of it, hopefully. But Dark Matter is on Apple TV Plus if anybody wants to join us on that experience. Okay, final thing that you wanted to mention here, Jacob, is you've been catching up on two different shows?
Yeah, I've been watching both versions, US and UK, of The Traitors. Ben, have you watched The Traitors on Peacock or heard of it?
I have definitely heard of it. I've not watched any of it. I actually don't subscribe to Peacock. That's one of the very few streaming services that I don't have. So I have missed this entire phenomenon.
All right. The Traitors is extremely good trash reality TV, Ben. It is like top tier trash reality TV. The idea is that it's set in a Scottish castle and they bring in 20 people. And in the first episode, a certain number of them are assigned as traitors. And the rest of them are assigned as faithfuls. And it's the job of the traitors to murder, in quotation marks, or eliminate one player per night. And it's the job of the faithfuls to root out who the traitors are. And whoever's the last one standing wins. And at the end of the game, at the end of the season, if there's even one traitor left in the group, then the traitors win all the money that's been built throughout the season. And if there's no traitors left, then the faithfuls win. So if you've ever played Mafia or Werewolf or any social deduction tabletop games, it's like that on a big, grand, lavish scale in the Scottish countryside. But the two shows are very different. The American version is the first season is a mixture of reality TV show veterans and regular folks. And season two is entirely reality show veterans. And the tone is very high camp. Everybody's there to like really put on a show, especially in season two, where it's, you know, a lot of reality show veterans who are like people who are in shows like Big Brother and Real Housewives type stuff. And I don't watch those shows at all, but I will admit that season two is very well cast for people who know how to bring drama and know how to like start arguments and confusion. People who are there to play the game. And it's really, really fun. And Alan Cumming, the Scottish actor who just won an Emmy for hosting the show, he's the host of the American version. He's a hoot. He is described his character, even though his character is called Alan Cumming as the host, he is described it as if he was playing Moira Rose from Schitt's Creek as himself. And it's just the most ridiculous, over-the-top reality show host I've ever seen. He's always dressed to the nines, and he knows the assignment. He's camping it up and just keeping it really funny and just bringing in the right level of like theatricality to it. And I found it's really addictive. But the UK version, though, is different because it's the exact same sets. Like literally, they the exact same Scottish castle, the exact same like competition games, the exact same camera angles, the exact same sets. It's everything's the same. They literally just brought in the American cast versus the British cast. But the UK version is entirely regular people. There are no celebrities in the cast. It's all like people who like, I'm a banker, I'm a student, you know, I'm a doctor, you know, and the tone is therefore different. Instead of people who are there to put on a show and are there to like, you know, grind each other down with their like forceful personalities, the UK version is very much like, I'm here to win this money because I could actually use it, as opposed to the celebrity version where it's like people who are just kind of there to increase their brand. So the stakes feel different. I really enjoy the high camp drama of the American version. I found it really addictive and funny, and some of the personalities are an absolute hoot. But the UK version, where everybody is just far more low key and you feel like they're really there because holy shit, this could change my life if I win this, lends a very different and often darker tone. Like if somebody gets betrayed or backstabbed or lied to in the celebrity version of America, I kind of like chuckle, like look at them, these are reality stars like being mean to each other. But when things get weird and cruel in the UK version, it gets like really intense and like really unsettling. It's like, oh my god, these are real people and they're actually like really going at each other. See, I really recommend both, honestly. And like I said, they're both very different flavors, but it's fascinating to watch them and realize that it's the exact same setup. Like I said, the exact same ways that they go about like for example, like they'll do a set piece where it's like, you know, you gotta go find this hidden thing or complete this task to raise money for the end game pot. So it'll be like the exact same setup, but will play out so differently in terms of tone because of the casting and because of different audiences intended for both versions of the show. So if you're completely allergic to trashy reality TV, then don't watch The Traitors. But if you're like me and you have a certain enjoyment for good competition reality shows. The Traitors is really like top tier competition reality show, and I'm going to recommend it.
So are both versions streaming on Peacock?
They both are. There's the just the regular Traitors and the Traitors UK are both streaming together. And apparently there's also an Australian version, but that one is currently not available for streaming.
Oh, man. Are you going to check that one out if it becomes available somewhere? Are you just like curious enough about this franchise to dip into that one?
Maybe. I don't know. Like I said, I was really nervous about when I finished the American version. Like, will I want to watch the UK one if it's all this, you know, the same setup, both different people? And the tone was so different and like strikingly different that I was immediately like going, okay, yeah, I'm going to watch all of this. Like, there's two seasons of the UK version, two seasons of the American version. And I just realized, yeah, I'm as long as Peacock has this, I guess I'm paying for Peacock. I know that Peacock's been struggling in the headlines a lot. It's lost a lot of money for NBC Universal. And this is one of the shows that has been like breaking through, one of the very few Peacock shows to like actually have any kind of pop culture, you know, influence whatsoever. And now that I've seen it, I'm like, oh yeah, this is like, as somebody who's watched every season of Amazing Race, as somebody who tried Survivor but didn't care for it, this really feels like it's the next big competition reality show. It's like, oh yeah, this feels like the next evolution for what this kind of show can be and should be. Not to say it's not trashy, because it is, but it's really, really good trash.
All right, so that's two seasons or two versions of The Traitors, which are both streaming on Peacock right now. So check that out if you're interested. I think that's going to do it for today's episode of the show. You can find more about most of the stuff that we talked about at slashfilm.com. I will try to link to a few things in the show notes. Slash Film Daily is published every weekday, bringing you the most exciting news from the world of movies and TV, as well as deeper dives into the great features you can find on the site. You can subscribe to the show on Apple, Overcast, Spotify, wherever you get your podcasts. Send your feedback, questions, comments, concerns, and mailbag topics to us at bpearson@slashfilm.com. Make sure to leave your name and general geographic location in case we mention your email on the air. Don't forget to take a minute to rate and review the show on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. That really helps us out a lot. Tell your friends about the show any way you can. Thanks so much for listening, and we'll talk to you all tomorrow.
Fall into big savings, all in the Kroger app. Get packs of juicy red, green, black, or tri-color variety seedless grapes for $3.99 each. Then get tender boneless chuck roast or steaks for $4.99 a pound, all with your card and a digital coupon. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.